Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Lenny Susskind may well be the only top-flight theoretical physicist who began his career as a plumber. Born Leonardo Susskind in 1940, by the time he was in his mid-30s, he'd established an enviable reputation as an elementary particle physicist and an exceptionally lucid lecturer, as I often saw for myself as a student. Now based at Stanford University, Susskind has proved himself to be an original thinker, full of imaginative ideas about the way the world works. My name is Graham Farmelow, and I'm the author of the book The Universe Speaks in Numbers. And this is one of 20 interviews, most of them with leading experts involved in the overlap between physics and mathematics. I was eager to speak with Susskind because his approach to theoretical physics is rather less mathematical than most of the theorists who feature in the latter part of my book. His primary focus has always been principles and ideas, not fancy mathematics. I began by asking him about his childhood in the South Bronx. He told me that he was not particularly academic as a child, and that as a teenager, he began to work alongside his father, who owned a flourishing plumbing business. Lenny hated being a plumber. It was a dirty, ugly job, he now remembers. And he didn't give much thought about going to college until his father had an idea for developing the family business.
My father had the idea, this was in the South Bronx, that there were all these old tenement buildings from the 19th century that all had heating systems, furnaces and boilers and things. And he intuited correctly that they were dying, they were finished, and they would have to be replaced. And so he decided he could make a good living by getting into the business of replacing the heating systems in old tenement buildings, mm-hmm. of which he was eminently qualified. Mm-hmm. The only problem is he was a little worried about whether he knew enough about the engineering of heating. He had a fifth grade education, that was it. Particularly, there would be manuals about how to deal, and there were words in it that he didn't know. One of the words he didn't know was BTU, British Thermal.
Yeah.
And this intimidated him to some extent. So he decided, I should go to college and go to engineering school, learn mechanical engineering, and then we would go into business doing this.
Susskind enrolled at the City College of New York to study engineering, though he was not really cut out for it. He remembers an engineering professor telling him to drop out of the engineering course and specialize in something else.
He said, you're really smart. You should be a scientist of some sort. Mm-hmm. And this was the best advice I've ever had in my life.
Okay.
And he was concerned about me. He knew that I didn't like engineering. And I didn't know it, but he had spotted me as somebody with talent.
Susskind decided on what he really wanted to do after he came into the orbit of one of the college's mathematics professors, a winner of the prestigious Fields Medal, and also, in Susskind's recollection, completely nuts.
I took a class with him. It was advanced calculus or something. He would not come into classes. When he didn't come into classes, the department chairman told him, you have to be there for your classes. And Jesse Douglas said, why? And the answer was, if for no other reason, so the students can see your happy face. So we came into class one day. There's a big picture of Jesse Douglas smiling on the front of the blackboard. No Jesse Douglas.
Right.
But, you know, he would teach every so often blabber on and on, and then every so often he would say something really magical about mathematics.
Right.
Just, oh my God. So he decided to take me as his protege, and he would give me problems to solve. And sometimes I could solve the problems. And I was thinking, okay, maybe I should be a mathematician. And again, somebody came to my rescue, Jesse Douglas, and he said, you know, you're really, really smart. And this must have pained him, because he was not somebody to tell anybody they were smart. He said, you're really smart. He said, but you don't have the mind of a mathematician. And that was true. I said, what should I do? He said, you have the mind of a physicist.
Well, okay.
So I went over to the physics department, and I ran into a guy by the name of Harry Sudak. Harry Sudak was somebody from the same background that I came from. Very much so. He was a physics professor, and he really took me under his wing. And he taught me something that I really didn't know, two things I really didn't know. One is that, yes, there is a profession called physics where there is still physics to be done, and it is not all the work of 200-year dead white Englishmen or Germans or whatever. So I learned from him that there was still that physics was a living, breathing thing, which I didn't know. And the other thing I found out from him is you could make a profession of it. Mm-hmm. You could be a physics professor.
Right.
And at that point, I knew, you know, this is the way I want to spend my life.
Having decided to become a physicist, Soskin knew he had to tell his father that his son was not going to follow in his footsteps.
I knew I had to tell him. So I got in my car with my wife and my child, and we drove over to my father's house and went downstairs in the basement where he was working. And I walked in, and I was really upset. I just blurted out, Benny, I'm not going to be an engineer. Mm. And I can't really remember this happening, but I know that it happened because it's one of these things that you remember over and over again. And it just became real. He said to me, this is what I remember remembering. And I think he said something, what the hell are you going to be, a ballet dancer or something like that?
Yeah.
And I said, no, a physicist. And he had never heard the word physicist, and he heard pharmacist. And he said, no, you ain't going to work in any drugstore.
Huh.
And I said, no, not a pharmacist, a physicist. And he said, what is that? And by luck, I said the right thing. I said, like Einstein.
Yes. Right?
Because I didn't know who else to say. He wouldn't have heard of anybody else like Einstein. And you have to understand, I mean, my father, although a fifth grade education, he had an enormous intellectual side to him, or a caring about intellectual things.
Mm-hmm.
And when he heard Einstein, you know, being a Jew from New York, and Einstein was the great hero of in many, many ways, he just looked at me and he said, are you any good at this? And I said, yes, I think I'm very good at it. I think I'm good at it. I can't tell for sure, but I think I'm very good at it. He thought it over, and he said, okay, all right, if that's what you're going to do, that's what you're going to do. My mother came in with my wife, and she was crying.
Oh.
She was crying because she was worried I wasn't going to be able to make a living, and this and that. The baby was going to starve. And she said something, and my father just shot her a look. And this I do remember. And he just looked at her and said, shut up. He was very kind to my mother. He was not an abusive person.
No.
Shut up. He's going to be Einstein. And that was the end of it.
By the mid-1970s, Lenny Susskind was a star. He had a distinctive style and wide interests. It seemed to me that he was much more strongly focused on trying to understand how the world works than in trying to comprehend state-of-the-art mathematics.
I think that's fair. Yes, I think that's right. But from time to time, I find myself getting involved with very mathematical things.
Huh.
And at first, it's an enormous struggle. For example, now what do I work on? I'm working on this subject of quantum complexity. It's a highly mathematical subject, really mathematical. And
would you like to say what it is, roughly? Roughly?
It's a thing that came out of computer science and quantum computer science.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to do with the questions of how difficult it is to carry out a computer program. Let's say, how many steps does it take to do something that you're trying? You want to do a task. How complicated is a task? Well, one measure of how complicated it is, how many simple operations do you have to do to carry out the task? Mm-hmm. That's called complexity theory. Yep. Quantum complexity theory is the quantum mechanical version of it. And at some point, while I was thinking very hard about black holes, I realized that there was a place in it for this quantum complexity. Mm-hmm. It answered a question. But, you know, I had to learn a little bit about what quantum complexity is, what complexity is. Mm-hmm. And so where do I look when I need to learn a piece of mathematics? I look on Wikipedia because I don't have any books.
You began with Wikipedia.
I always begin with Wikipedia. And it's dreadful because the mathematicians who write, they don't seem to have any capacity at all to be able to communicate with anybody.
But themselves?
Yeah.
Why?
They're terrible. They're terrible communicators. Mm-hmm. Not all of them, of course, but a large fraction of them. Why that is, I don't know.
And have you always, I know Wikipedia's not been there throughout your career, but have you always basically, as a physicist, way back from the 70s, wasn't it, you were starting to really make an impact. Have you always gone to elementary books or elementary sources rather than
to... I have a real aversion to math lingo, math speak. I have an extreme aversion to it, and I cannot stand to read it. So I always am looking for some place where a thing is explained at almost the level of a layperson. Once I get the idea, I can fill in the steps myself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's always been the case that I try to find a place where I can learn it in the easiest possible language. And Wikipedia is not it, but basically there is no place.
Yeah, I see.
And so I struggle through with a little bit, get the idea, and then I can do the mathematics. And I'm probably a pretty good mathematician, although I'm not good at the most abstract way of thinking. Mm-hmm. I tend to think very concretely, rather than abstract and in great generalization.
Sound a bit Feynman-like.
Feynman was a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons we were good friends is because there was a sort of commonality to our way of thinking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. So, yes, I think so. Because to put myself in the category of Feynman is an act of chutzpah, as they say.
I just talk about the approach that I would suggest. He's a great problem solver, without question.
Yeah.
But I don't think
I was also a good problem solver.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was great at high school mathematics. Mm. Oh, man, like can I solve problems?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I now understand that mathematicians don't solve problems anymore. I'm still a good problem solver. The thing is, they're more interested in the structure of generalizations and so forth. The mathematicians that I've had the best luck with understanding in written form and so forth were Russian mathematicians. Mm. Those who did not like the fancified French way of thinking, of doing mathematics, the Bourbaki, the Bourbaki bots. And so I tend to go to the Russian mathematicians when I want to understand something.
After the standard model of subatomic particles took its final shape in the early-ish 1970s, fundamental physics gradually became more mathematical, especially in the 1980s, when the supply of new clues from experiments slowed down. Most young theoretical physicists are now trained in branches of mathematics that their predecessors 40 years ago had scarcely heard of. What's Susskind's view of this mathematical trend?
Real success in physics was string theory, the development of string theory. That was me and Nambu. The invention of string theory is usually attributed to me and Nambu. And it wasn't very mathematical at that time, but I soon found myself trying to do problems that required mathematics. And so I was probably the first one in that context to use certain kinds of mathematics that are now common knowledge, but which are pretty damn mathematical at the time. Elliptic functions, Jacobi theta functions, all sorts of fancy stuff. The Hardy Ramanujan formula, which I didn't know at all. I had this problem. I had this problem that when I calculated something, I got some infinite product. I had no idea what it was. I looked at it. I had no idea what that was. So I had a friend who was a mathematician, Donald Newman, and I showed him the product, and I said, "What is this?" And he said, "Oh, that's the Hardy Ramanujan thing. Just look in Whitaker's book at page 444 or something." Mm-hmm. I looked in the book, I found the function, found out what it was, a little bit, maybe two or three pages of how to use it. And that was very mathematical, at least at the time, by standards of the time. When I worked on lattice gauge theory, what's called Hamiltonian lattice gauge theory, which was also a subject. The mathematics by now was very, very simple to people, but people in our field didn't know it at that time. Certain kinds of group theory and things. And so again, I learned the minimal amount that I needed and then was able to do it. But I never formally learned mathematics in any formal sense after elementary calculus.
And that never got you into trouble?
No, I don't think it did. No, I don't think it ever did.
Right.
Now, you know, I do have a reputation as being rather cavalier with mathematics. Mm-hmm. I think somebody here at the conference the last week, Aronson was describing his interaction with me, and he said, well, Lenny says, I don't do proof, you do it. So I have a reputation of being pretty loose with mathematics.
But you don't get things wrong. I mean, it's a bit like Feynman in a way, that you didn't have to be rigorous, but you get on the right
path.
Here's
my feeling about it, that there are more than one way to know things.
Yeah.
Mathematical proof is one way, but there are other ways. If I go to my garage with my car isn't working well, and the mechanic looks under the hood and says, oh, I know what it is. It's the carburetor. There aren't carburetors in cars anymore, I understand. He says, it's the carburetor. I don't ask him for a mathematical proof.
No.
He's experienced. He's seen many cars. He knows that if the car behaves this way, and if he pokes it over here and he pokes it over there, then it's probably the carburetor.
What does Susskind think of the current state of fundamental physics?
I'm extremely excited by the questions. Personally, I'm not particularly concerned with I originally was officially an elementary particle physicist. Mm-hmm. Elementary particles is not going so well. There's no new experimental input, and nobody really knows what to do. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of reaching a point of, should I call it diminishing returns? It could change. Mm-hmm. It could easily change. I don't think that's doing very well. It's not the fault of the physicists. It's just the fact that they've reached a barrier, and with no possible access experimentally to things that we're not doing very well figuring out theoretically. So that's not doing exceptionally well. My guess is the same thing may happen to cosmology, that they will eventually run, and they're fairly close to it now, running out of new data. So it may also be a barrier there. It may run. But on the other hand, there are other areas that are incredibly exciting to me, in particular these questions about the connection between quantum mechanics and gravity. I find them extremely exciting. Whole new ways of thinking about the world, and whole new ways, and it's progressing beautifully with people, especially like Maldacena, and he, a few others, are really, really changing the way we think about quantum mechanics, about gravity. I just find that incredibly exciting. So, for me, I had no trouble saying, okay, elementary particles is not going anywhere, I'm going to think about gravity.
How refreshing it is to hear someone, a senior person, actually say, well, the whole field's gone to pot. You're saying the opposite. You're saying there's plenty of things to do.
No, it's amazing the ideas that are going on.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just a person who genetically gets excited easily, but boy, do I find what's going on now exciting. I think really, in many ways, the kind of questions that I had hoped to be studying when I entered physics, the deep questions, the questions that I would have hoped to be around, that I might have hoped to be around when quantum mechanics was being invented, but I found myself coming in a little too late. Okay, elementary particles are interesting. Quantum field theory had been basically worked out by my friend Feynman and Schwinger and Dyson and so forth. And, elementary particles are interesting, or experiments and so forth, but I didn't find it as exciting and as fundamental and the principles as deep as I might have hoped that the, you know, was what Einstein worked on. Remember, I was going to be Einstein, you have to remember. And so, in a sense, it was almost a little bit of a disappointment. I don't feel that way. Boy, do I not feel that way now. No, I feel very much that we're building entirely new principles about the connection between gravity, quantum mechanics, the two most fundamental things, and I think that's just incredibly exciting.
Finally, I asked Susskind what his father made of the young Leonardo's success after he'd abandoned plumbing for physics.
Yeah, let's see, he died in 1978, so I was already a, I was 1978, must have been 38 years old, yeah. I was already a professor at Stanford before that I had been a professor in New York. Yeah.
And your mother too?
Yeah.
She saw that, yeah.
But I don't think my father really cared that much about the prestige and so forth.
But his plumbing business did okay?
Not really. It killed him.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. I don't mean that a truck fell on him.
No, it
killed his health. Yeah.
But he regarded it as a good move for you to go into the Einstein field.
I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
I'm sure he did in the end. But it was also in many ways a disappointment. He had hoped that he and I would be in business together. So I doubt that he ever got over the disappointment of not the two of us being together. But yes, he was very supportive.
You know, Einstein, towards the end of his life, in some comment, I think it was after the Oppenheimer trial, said if sometimes wish he'd been a plumber.
He knew what that meant.
No.
I honestly do not think he knew meant.
I'm sure he was speaking better.
Okay, Albert, you want to be a plumber? Okay, I'll show you what that is.
Oh dear.
You won't like it.
It was wonderful to hear that Susskind is still hugely enjoying working at the frontiers of physics. At a slow time for theorists who mainly seek guidance from the results of new experiments, he's continuing to advance our understanding of nature's fundamental forces, even without taking a mathematical approach. For theorists with Susskind's insight and imagination, there are still plenty of opportunities to make progress.